Session number 20512, Reel 2.
General Tower, Reel 2. So did you get the chance for relaxation in Egypt?
We travelled there in a little Italian troopship, and Egyptian troopship, and we were bombed quite severely, but not hit, going up the Red Sea. And our captain wanted to turn around and go back, and we had to take guns up to the bridge and say, no, turn around, we're going to Port Sudan. We're going to Suez, which he duly did. And we got off there, and my commanding officer and I got in a car and drove to Cairo, where we met our new commanding officer, Claude Eastman, at Shepherd's Hotel. And we said, this is the form, we're here, we're hoping to have a night or two in Cairo, and get some new guns and go on up. We knew we were going up the desert again, because Rommel had arrived in the desert by then. And we met him there, and then we all three went off, me very much in the background as a young, very young captain, adjutant, to see the Brigadier Royal Artillery at the headquarters of GHQ. And he said to my new commanding officer, Claude Eastman, I'm afraid there's no question of you staying a night in Cairo. You've got to go straight through the desert because you're badly needed up there. And Claude said, what about some guns? He said, oh, there are no guns. They've all been sent to Greece and we've lost a whole lot there. So Claude said, well, can we just have one night to give these poor chaps a chance to let off steam a bit? And he said, yes. And I must say, they arrived about six and they were told they'd have one night in Cairo. And we were leaving at six next morning. And the whole regiment went into Cairo. And they all came back and were on their vehicles to leave at 6 o'clock next morning. So morale was pretty high. We were a very good regiment. And off we went to the desert again, where we went, I suppose that was late April, early May, 41.
Where did you go to this time?
We went about halfway between halfway between Alamein and the frontier. The regiment had deployed, and our HQ was on a beach, next to a beach. And I always remember one morning I was swimming in the early morning, and suddenly I saw corpses coming in, and they came in for 2 or 3 weeks. These are the corpses of either soldiers or sailors who'd been involved in the fighting in Crete. A horrible sight. We spent our time burying them, or taking their tags and then burying them.
Many of them?
Oh, I suppose 50 or 60, probably. This is just one beach.
And then?
Then we had the very abortive battle in summer of that year, when we attacked under General Beresford Pearson with the new tanks that had been sent out. And we were beaten by Rommel. We first met the great 88 anti-tank gun that the Germans had. It was so effective. And I remember that night I had gone forward to Saloum to collect, I can't remember why, but anyway, I had to go forward in my truck, which had all my radios and things in it. And I did what I had to do, and then came back, was driving back, and the whole Western Desert Force was withdrawing. And suddenly my engine broke down, and the fitter's truck turned up, it had a spare engine in it. And they changed the complete engine over between midnight and dawn. People can do an awful lot when they have to. And then we drove on, got back all right.
Where was this?
This is between Sidi Barani and Saloum. And then we went back and continued all the summer, just being part of the force, watching the Africa Corps. And then we were sent down to this ghastly place called Jarabub, the oasis of Jarabub, J-A-I-R-A-B-Bub, where my colonel immediately took sick and went off to Cairo. He was taken, he was evacuated. And we sat there, flies all day and mosquitoes all night. It was the most singularly unpleasant 3 or 4 weeks I remember at that time. And we sat there until, fortunately, we were relieved and went back further north before the next big offensive.
What was the level of health at Jarabub?
We had quite a lot of soldiers who went sick with mosquito disease, malaria and things like that. But not too many. Plenty of reinforcements came up from Cairo. But it was most unpleasant, I remember. We had a very good regimental padre called Peacock, who later became Archbishop in Ulster in the 50s and 60s, who was a great comfort.
So this is the summer of 1941?
Yeah, summer and early autumn of 41. Then we went back up into the northern part, nearer the sea, to get ready for the big autumn offensive, Cunningham's offensive, which took, I can't remember, I think it's early November we attacked. And a lot of fighting, and then the Battle of Sidi Rezeg. But it was very impressive when we went in, but it became extremely confused later on during that battle. Nobody knew. You didn't know whether you were going to see Germans or British from any direction, as one sees in all the various memoirs of that occasion.
In what way was it so impressive when you went in?
Because this enormous army, it appeared enormous. It was. We had about 1,300 tanks, I think, all going along in the moonlight. And then in the daylight, up to meet the Germans.
What was happening to you personally at this time?
I was still adjutant of the regiment, and I was sort of presiding over everything he did, writing the orders and being with my colonel. And, all the things that adjutants do.
What were the main problems of being adjutant of a unit like
that?
No,
it's just making sure that all the arrangements are made for ammunition supply and food and maps, and everybody knows what they've got to do. I mean, if the colonel wants a battery to go somewhere, the adjutant tells it. You are the chief staff officer, the commanding officer in any battalion or regiment.
But were there any special problems about being adjutant in North Africa?
I don't think so, no.
What do you recollect next?
Well, we eventually defeated, or at least caused the Africa Corps to withdraw. Then we had a very brisk occasion when we were suddenly attacked by a group of German tanks just as we were coming to action at a place called Sidi Bergisk. And we were attacked and we were completely overrun, that battery, of one of our batteries, and various people were killed. But eventually the Germans pushed off. We were able to get our guns back, or some of them. And then we would continue the advance towards Benghazi and Derna. And eventually, just before Christmas, we suddenly got out of the flat desert into the what was called the Jebel Akhdar, the Green Mountain, which is a bit of Sarini. We went on and went into Derna, and we camped near Derna for Christmas. And by a remarkable piece of luck, or good thought, about a fortnight before, I had sent one of our young officers back with a truck to Cairo to buy Christmas fare for the regiment, turkeys and all the things for Christmas. And absolute miracle of miracles, on the Christmas Eve morning, he he suddenly arrived. He found that he'd come. We moved 100 miles further west, and he'd been down to Cairo with his truck, but he got all the stuff. So the regiment had a really good Christmas. But I vaguely had to see him, I must say. Not only me, everybody was.
Were Indian troops?
I hadn't told you that in that summer they decided that the Indian troops should go back to India join the various Indian army divisions being formed in India. And then by that time we had nothing but Sikhs, and we had a Subedar major who was a sort of head major. And by that time I was the only officer who would speak Urdu, because all our other officers from India had gone or been killed. And in fact it was right to go, but it was a very sad parking. We gave him a lovely present, but these people had fought with us in North Africa and East Africa and Eritrea, and we were very sad to see them go. So by that time, by the Christmas of 41, we were entirely British.
What happened after Christmas?
Well, we then went on from Derna further west and were in action. No, we weren't in action, we were just waiting about 20 miles south of Benghazi, really to see what was going to happen, 4th Indian Division. Anyway, in due course, Rommel attacked again, the Africa Corps, and they completely got across our line of withdrawal. We were told we had to get back and cross behind the Africa Corps, if possible, and get back into central Libya again, nearer Tobruk. That was rather tricky, because our maps were really bad, and B, we didn't really know where the Germans were. In fact, nobody did, really. But anyway, we duly did, and we crossed that line. Fascinating to see. They didn't know that we were British, I don't think, anymore. We knew they were German, because Germans always used to fire an awful lot of rockets, illuminating rockets during the night. Anyway, we eventually got back. We lost 2 or 3 guns, which we had to abandon, because we ran out of petrol. Certainly said we had to abandon a few vehicles. But we eventually got back and rejoined our own division back near Tobruk.
About which month have we reached now?
January 42. And then, after a bit up there, we were withdrawn as a regiment to the Delta, to Cairo, to refit. So we all went back to Cairo. And then in early or late May, or early June 42, one brigade group of 4th Indian Division was called for to go up to reinforce the 2nd South African Division, which had been given the task of defending Tobruk. So we went up. And by that time, I had become a battery commander, a major. I was commanding my old battery, which I originally joined in 37.
Which battery was this?
That was called 31st/58th Battery. And it was interesting because we had 8 guns, and all 8 sergeants in charge had all joined the regiment in 1937 when I had either all as gunners and I was a second lieutenant. So we were all really rather friends. And I knew them very well. We'd been together for 2 years fighting. And as we'll hear later, 6 of the 8 of them were killed in front of my eyes in Tobruk. Anyway, we got up to Tobruk, and I was suddenly sent forward. Oh yes, and of course, it was absolutely chaotic because these had been put out quite clearly by the GHQ Middle East Land Forces. Tobruk was never going to be held again, and all the maps of where the mines were had all been sent back to Cairo. We used all these mine fields, a lot of sand in them, but one really didn't know where the hell the mines were because the maps had been taken back because we were never going to hold it again. And the gun pits had to be completely re-dug out. In fact, we dug new gun pits. Not easy in that very rocky soil. Anyway, we got there, and then I was sent out with my battery, a company of infantry and some anti-aircraft guns as a column to harass the Germans. So I commanded a force of all arms at the age of 24. I never did again until I was a brigade commander in Germany 20 years later. Anyway, we spent a couple of weeks out there just harassing the Germans.
How successful was that?
Can't tell. I mean, one used to fire, and you could only at that time in the summer, you would usually only fire in the early morning in the evening because of the mirage. Because the mirage used to come down again about 9 or the most 10 o'clock in the morning. Once the mirage had come, you couldn't see. Or you could see completely exaggerated forms. You certainly couldn't see proper targets. Anyway, one morning we were firing and I was suddenly sent for by my commanding officer, by the Commander Royal Artillery of 7th Armour Division, under which we were then, and told to go back into Tobruk. And I remember saying, but you can't, Tobruk's surrounded. He said, I don't think it is, I think you can probably get in. If necessary, you've got to fight your way into it. So I took my outfit back, about 20 miles or so, and about 8:30 or so, we got 20 miles back, and I said, well, we must stop and have breakfast. So we stopped and had our breakfast. And I'd got permission to the CRA, if the road was blocked and we couldn't get in, to go back to the frontier wire to meet at some rendezvous. Anyway, after breakfast, I think I may have gone up myself to the road. And it was absolutely empty, so I thought, okay, we don't go back into Brook. And then suddenly a white ambulance truck came down. It was an American field ambulance. And the neutral, American neutral still, you see, then. And because it had come down, I thought I'd get in. And in due course, we did, but I had to get my battery into action to fight our way into Tobruk. And then we got into Tobruk, and I remember thinking, we must have a lot of ammunition, because the Germans are certainly going to attack soon. And I had a terrible battle, because we carried about 200 rounds of gun with us. And I wanted to dump that and get another 400 rounds of gun at each gun position. And I had a battle with this rather silly old South African artillery commander, and then with another British colonel, who said, why do you want all this ammunition? I said, we're going to need it. Because after all, the gun is of no importance. It's the shell that does the damage. Anyway, I won my battle, and we dumped the guns, and then we were attacked on the morning of June the 20th by the Africa Corps, and we fired all 600 rounds of gun by 12 o'clock that morning when we were overrun by the Africa Corps, and I was captured.
Can you describe the circumstances under which you were captured, please?
Well, when we'd run out of ammunition and the tanks were very close and firing machine guns. The Germans had got very good. They didn't get close. They used machine gun, machine gun, machine gun until they had killed or wounded most of the gun crews, which they had done on that occasion. And I'd gone to a hole by then, but eventually they came up and I was taken out of the hole. And we all piled into a truck. And there was a very young, we were all young, of course, young German soldier, who just was wearing a pair of shorts and boots. And he was stupid enough to sit on the the tailboard. So I couldn't get, I sort of indicated people. Eventually I got up, gave him a push, and poor boy, he fell off quite a long way down on his back, on his bare back. But some of us hopped out, I hopped out. But an awful lot of them just sat in their bottoms and did nothing. I then walked a bit and got into a hole and waited for dark. And then the dark came, and I got out through the wire. I was extremely nervous going out through the wires. I didn't know what trip wires there were or anything. But anyway, I got across. I always remember the Italian divisions were all outside there, and they're singing, somebody singing O Sole Mio, quite beautifully. And then I walked on, and I found somewhere, when it dawned, I found somewhere to lie up in a big ammunition dump, which we had an immense amount of stuff outside Belhamid ready for our advance. And then the only thing was, I had not got self-control to stay there. And of course I ought to have laid up all that day, but I was by then extremely hungry. I just had a shirt and a pair of trousers and a pair of desert boots, that was all I had, and not even a hat. And I walked on, and I eventually saw some trucks, and I walked in. There was an Africa Corps Light Aid Detachment, who couldn't have been nicer, and they fed me, gave me something to drink, and I started to eat, and I spent about 4 hours with them. And then they said, I'm afraid we've got to send you into the book and hand you over to the Italians. I said, oh, no, I've been captured by you, the Africa Corps. I want to go to Germany. And they said, oh, no, I'm afraid we've got an agreement with the Italians that any prisoners captured in the old Italian Empire, i.e. Libya, in which we were, go to Italy. And anybody captured outside in Egypt, we go to Germany. So I've got to hand you over. Anyway, cut a long story short, I went, I was taken to Italy.
Before we go on to Italy, can I just ask you about that force that you took out to harass the Germans from Tobruk? Yeah. How big a force was that?
Well, I suppose it was about 400 men. It was all arms, infantry, light anti-aircraft, anti-tank, my own field guns, and signals. I think I probably had a few sappers too.
Did you take any casualties when you were doing the harassing work?
I can't remember, but if we did, there were very few.
And what was the nature of the fighting when you had to fight your way back into Tobruk?
Well, there was firing from the German troops, but it wasn't very heavy. And in fact, we just drove like hell, and we put down supporting fire. And then got our trucks and drove in. The Germans had hardly cut us off, they just started to.
Was this at night time or during the
daytime?
So can you tell me about your treatment as a POW?
Well, we landed at Bari. And we had the unpleasant experience of being stoned by the local populace as we drove in trucks. And at that time, all the Italians thought they were going to take Alexandria. Mussolini was over in North Africa with his horse and everything. Anyway, we were then taken to Bari, a camp, where I was for 3 months. And to be fair to the Italians, they never expected to capture 60,000 British prisoners that summer. So nothing was ready. And Bari was a transit camp, and I must say it was not very pleasant, and very little food.
Was this stoning at Bari a very serious thing?
No, not really. It was quite unpleasant. I mean, they were just lining the road and picking up stones and throwing it at us.
Were they in an angry mood? Or?
Oh, yes. Well, they were having fun. They thought they'd won the war at that precise moment of about 2 or 3 weeks.
Was anybody injured?
I don't think so. I honestly can't remember. So long ago.
Were you hit?
No. Well, I think I was hit by one stone, but it wasn't.
So you said you were at Bari for some time?
Then we were at Bari for 3 months. And I must admit, we got very hungry. We were very short of food. And you only had to walk about 20 feet with your container to where they serve the stew or whatever it was out. It wasn't very much of a stew. I remember once I fainted just in those 20 feet walking back to my bed. And after three months, so we all lost a lot of weight. We were moved up to a camp near Pescara near the Adriatic coast, just under the great mountain, the Gran Sasso d'Italia, where I was from all that winter until the summer of 43 at Chieti. It was rather fun in some ways. You had this glorious mountain, literally, over there, looking over the camp. Lots of lovely sun. One used to play bridge. I learned to play bridge in that camp, and we were all rather good at bridge by that time. We used to sit just in our shorts at a table outside playing bridge for hours. And then I was moved, because I was one of the escaping people, our camp commandant, the British one, was a rather silly old Indian Army colonel who was really peace at any price. And he always had people moved out who were any nuisance. We were moved up. I was with my great friend, who was moved up to a camp near in northern Italy, in the Lombardy Valley.
Who was your great friend?
He was a very wonderful man called Nigel Bowman Thomas, who was heir to Richard Thomas and Baldwin, the great steelworks. And we were tremendous friends. And a day later, he was killed at Darnham. Anyway, we got to this camp, where it was very funny, because it was only about 200 people. And they'd all been captured early on in the desert. And they managed to have their proper uniforms sent out from England. They had their own parcels. And we, by that stage, we had any of those things. But and they had two very nice old colonels. Am I being too discursive?
No, please.
Two colonels of the British cavalry who ran it. And four of us, who were only in our 20s, who would come up to the other camps, one day we were playing handball tennis. And we took our shorts off. This was in the summer in Italy, and we were just playing in shorts and shoes. And we were given a rocket, but we mustn't walk away with no shirts on. Still, it was just typical. Anyway, we were there, and then it became quite obvious. There was all the negotiations, Italy coming out of the war. And quite obviously, any number of Germans were coming into Germany. And you could hear them and see them down the valleys. And so some of us, Nigel and I and one other friend, had got ourselves ready for escaping. We got made a lot of very concentrated food, which we kept in cocoa tins. And we had them ready to put on around our belts. And then one day, as we were having our supper, no, we were going to have our supper, the radio came on, and our colonel commandant, Italian commandant, came in and said, Marshal Badoglio is going to broadcast, which he did, saying that Italy had surrendered and was going to join the Allies. And then Eisenhower came on and said, we're accepting the surrender. And then, rather to our amazement, our two dear old colonels, I mean, they're far younger than I am now, said, we'll now go to supper and thank God for our release. Now, the nearest British troops were 700 miles away, Montgomery's 8th Army, right down the toe of Italy. There hadn't even been the Salerno landings then. And I remember Nigel and I sat up all night waiting with our loins girded and everything ready. And one of our fellow prisoners of war came in and said, now, Philip and Nigel, I just want to know, what am I going to put in my wanted on voyage luggage or my whole luggage? And he was a very nice Eton Beak And we said, "It must be